This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, the leader interview conversation, and it is today with Albie Geldenhuys. We just had a half-hour conversation about leadership lessons, talking leadership with Albie as a man who's built a great business. He's the founder and CEO of USN Sports, and it's not only in South Africa anymore. It's in many countries. USN Sports Supplements. And one of the things you'll read when you read articles on him is that they went from 0 to 1 billion in 15 years. And I'm sure it's even bigger now and many, many employees. So Albie, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Great to be here.
Well, here we are. I mean, it's a great story, but obviously it wasn't always easy. I just read a bit about it. Let's kick off with those early beginnings. You're in a apartment, a flat in Hatfield, and that's where you start your business. So give us that background, how you got into it. You were a salesman in a gym, yeah. And but for some reason you started this business. Why? What prompted it?
Adrian, it really happened by chance. I was always interested in, you know, in fitness and, you know, just staying in shape and going to gym and so on. And that's how I basically ended up at the Health and Racket Club at the time, doing membership sales after my time in the police force. Then, you know, let's say in 98, the big creatine hit the market internationally. But at that stage, there were already a whole lot of supplement companies doing quite well in South Africa, a lot of imported brands and so on. And towards the end of 99, I thought to myself, well, I could go and buy creatine from a pharmaceutical company, put it in containers and sell it to friends. You know, I mean, there's a couple of people in the gym probably buy it from me. So I did that
But not starting with an idea to have a global
supplement. Not at all. No, not at all. I mean, I had no idea about business. The only business experience I had was the two sales courses I went on to become a membership sales consultant at the Health and Racket Club. My second full month at Health and Racket Club, we were 7 sales consultants, and I did more sales than the other 6 together. And to me, I thought, geez, you know what? It looks like I'm actually quite good at something, you know. So I didn't even realize how much money I was earning at that stage. I earned my second full month. I earned more than what I earned in the police force for a whole year, you know. So, but it was never really the driving factor. It wasn't the thing that made me work. I was given numbers, and I was shown how to achieve those goals, and I just liked smashing those goals. So, when I just started putting creatine in containers, sold it to friends, they came back, but I also explained to them exactly how to use it to get the best advantage. And what I really enjoyed a lot was them coming back to me, telling me how great this works, you know. And then I would put a couple of amino acids together, and I'd make a couple of formulations, and I'd give it to the rugby players, and the guys come back with amazing results. So to me, that was quite rewarding, just to get the feedback, all the positive feedback, and it was inspiring, you know. And then I thought to myself, you know what? There's all these imported brands that's so expensive, and there's a couple of local brands that's quite cheap. At that stage, the local the credibility and the quality of the local brands were questioned for some reason. So I thought to myself, let me go and approach a pharmaceutical company and get them to produce a couple of products for me. So I went to Columbia Pharmaceuticals. I don't know if I can mention the name, but they're a fantastic contract manufacturer, GMP manufacturing pharmaceutical products. Gave them a product idea. And their lab would fine-tune the product formulation, you know, and to comply, obviously, but, you know, to really just come up with the best tasting and effective product. And that's basically how I started rolling out products. Yeah, I found more contract manufacturers, and then I started supplying these little shops in the Health and Racket Labs. But then I'd add a little invoice book, and I would write out invoices myself, and I would, you know, get my brother to go and deliver with a little Uno, but I collected every single cent, and I made sure I collected every cent at the right time. That's basically how it started. You know, I got the offices in the CSIR in 2000, January 2000. That's basically, we could say, when the business started. So the total turnover of USN in January 2000 was 20,000 rand for the month. And I thought to myself, geez, I've actually, this is a business. This is actually a real business. So for me, starting being excited about such a small turnover was, I think, probably what to my biggest advantage. Because 4 months later, in April, our turnover was 160,000. And I mean, to me, 160,000 rand.
Mind-blowing.
That was mind-blowing. I was just so excited. I couldn't wait to wake up the next morning just to go and phone shops and get orders and send them out and, you know, and you get feedback from consumers and develop the new the next product and so on. So I basically did everything from packing boxes, putting labels on containers, you know, having products collected, delivering it, doing the invoicing, collecting the money, you know, and but then I must also say there was no, for the first probably 5 years, I can't remember that I ever went out for lunch. Lunch wasn't even an option. I had a protein shake, I had my oats in the morning, and only reason why I went home at 5:30 to 6 o'clock is because my wife made me, which is a good thing, because I probably would have overworked myself.
So you absolutely loved it.
I absolutely pumping loved, and it. Loved it.
Results, everything.
Yeah, the results, and the results was the one thing. But now, I mean, I could do sales, which I love. And I love the creative side of things. I love putting things together. I love putting products together, and I love coming up with labels and you know, and design concepts and and the design concepts and being involved in every single aspect of the business and seeing it grow.
I'm interested in, you got into pharmacies, you got into Dis-Chem, which in 2000, I don't know how big, or 2002, whenever it went to Dis-Chem.
Yeah.
Dis-Chem was, when did it start? I mean, it's massive now.
Yes.
Maybe it's the early days of Dis-Chem, I don't know, but they were quite a hit.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic, wasn't it? Getting into Dis-Chem, my goodness. But that also, that dream almost crashed. Tell us about that disappointment.
Yeah.
I want to talk through dealing with that.
Yeah.
You wake up one day and you realize, oh gosh, something has changed here.
Yeah. So we went into Dis-Chem about the middle of 2002. At that stage, I think Dis-Chem, they were already about 10, 15 years old. Dis-Chem was growing. That was the pharmacy to shop at. If your product's available in Dis-Chem shelves, then your supplement company has made it. So it was a huge honor. And
did it take your turnover to another level?
It did take our turnover to the next level. But Dis-Chem, they're aggressive in the way they do business. They're demanding, justifiably. They can demand the discounts they want. It's just a matter of, do we want to offer the discounts? You know, so, you know, I suppose a bit of ignorance from my side as well. When Dis-Chem demanded a specific discount, I just said no. I can't give them that discount because I'm not giving anyone else that discount. So they said, well, we're not going to accept your products if I don't give them the discount. So, well, I just thought if I do give them a discount and it's just so much more than any other retailer, I'm unfair to all the other retailers who actually helped me build the brand up until that point.
You were trying to be loyal in a way, I guess.
Yeah, it's going to be loyal. But I also thought to myself, well, if I'm going to give into the discount demand right now, where is it going to stop? And I was told, listen, yeah, we're going to stop ordering. We're not interested in USN. And I said, well, fine. Well, it wasn't fine, but I mean, you know, it was either that or I give into something that was just completely against what I believe was right at the time. Obviously, I mean, it's Dis-Chem's full right to demand the discounts. It's their real retail environment. So we built USN around in all the gyms and private owned pharmacies and so on. And then 3 months later, you know, Dis-Chem phoned me again and said, okay, you know, let's talk business again. And then from there on, you know, so yes, the disappointment at the time, it was very disappointment, but a bit disappointing, but it was a big learning curve as well.
Didn't they buy shares in another competitor or something?
So that was the year later.
Okay.
So,
Oh, I see. So you left them in a way, came back in.
We basically, let's say, got thrown out.
Okay, yes.
And so that was the first disappointment.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Then the next one. I don't know how much you want to say about that, or how much, but that is a reality.
Yeah.
And then I must also just emphasize, I mean, they're a fantastic partner still today, still today. But we did go through the growing pains together. So we went back into Dis-Chem, and the business just obviously carried on growing because, you know, Dis-Chem offered such a great environment for your products to sell. So in 2003, we heard that Dis-Chem bought 50% shares in a competitor brand, and we knew what's going to happen. Their loyalties will obviously shift directly to the brand, which is obviously natural. That's where the investment's gone. But for me, it was important to then create demand at consumer level, because who's ultimately buying the product? Who's the consumer? He's buying the product. So if he wants the product, it doesn't matter what the retailer owns. They're going to want the product that they want, especially if you create the demand on consumer level. So that's when I decided we're going to have to start doing national advertising in print media, in the Men's Health magazine, and a couple of magazines, fitness magazines.
You can mention any brand. It's Cliff Central.
It was extremely stressful, and I knew we had to now just come, become incredibly aggressive and creative. So that's basically when, I don't know if you can remember, that we had a campaign with Jaco van der Westhuizen, and before and after photo, where he transformed in 12 weeks. The reality is that transformation was actually in 8 weeks, but nobody would have believed someone can transform like that in 8 weeks. So we said it was a 12-week transformation. So and when that campaign broke, we had lamp pole ads and we had ads in all the magazines and so on. It just created a huge pull off the shelves. And I also knew, well, I assumed, and I was right, is that because the supplement company, who now sold 50% to Dis-Chem, they would expect Dis-Chem's now going to do the job. They're going to sit back. Dis-Chem's going to obviously expect them to carry on building their business. Mm. So what's going to happen? They're going to drop the ball. And we knew that's going to happen. So, and that's the time that you need to be very aggressive. Build very good relationships on store level. So the guys working on the floor in the Dis-Chem, they need to be our best friends. And I made very sure that we visit those stores on a daily basis. Mm. So the reps knew exactly what they needed to do. Fortunately, that relationship lasted about 3 months. USN during that period, because of the stress that we had, and we just absolutely pulled out all the stops, we grow extensively, and the competitive brand basically just nosedived, and Dis-Chem basically gave the 50% back to them. So that worked very well.
That's
for
a very
us.
Good lesson to learn, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That stress can make you freeze. They say fight, flight, or freeze.
Yes.
It obviously made you fight.
Yes. Again, because failure is not an option. Mm. It's war. To us, that's war. And you don't go into war hoping that you're going to win. You got to be very sure you're going to win.
Mm. Oh, well done on that one. And then your business grew bigger and bigger. And, yes. and they come, you have growing pains that you've mentioned before in other articles. I just want us to record it here as well. You learned some serious lessons.
Yeah.
You had to step back a bit and do what you love and bring in other leaders and made mistakes there. Yeah. I mean, you've learned some serious mistakes, serious lessons, and made some big mistakes.
So, as the business grew, I always knew that I won't be able to do everything in the business. I won't be able to, to manage inventory, to do all the creative work, to develop products, and manage the sales team, and manage the finances, and making sure that we collect all the, all the money. So, so I started employing and empowering people that may not have been the right people at the time. And it's not that I necessarily wanted to do things that I loved more, but things that I thought I was better at doing.
Play to your strengths.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not very organized. I can be very organized if I'm forced to organize. Be organized. I, I'm, I don't enjoy finances. But I can be very good at it if I'm really focused.
And you want the finances to look damn good.
And they've got to look damn good. And they did look very good while I was in charge of it, you know. And because that's ultimately what's going to grow the business. You know, I wasn't going to lend any money, so I could only grow the business with the profits. So yes, I suppose the mistakes I made was then just to take a couple of steps back. But when I take a step back, then I take a step back completely, which is the wrong thing to do. You know, when you empower someone, you still need to understand what they're doing. You still need to monitor. You still need to set the goals. You still
don't let go too quickly.
And don't let go of every completely. Not too quickly and not completely. Mm. But that was probably also, you know, one of my characteristics at the time. If I can't be fully involved into something, I don't want to be involved at all.
Mm.
You know, so it's finding that balance of involvement in those categories of the business so that you're still very aware of what's going on and you can still contribute without having to micromanage.
That's an interesting lesson. And the question is whether you've learned them so consciously that you will not make the same mistakes in the US or any other market that you go into. Are they recorded in your mind?
Yes.
Because, as I said, leaders can unlearn things, and you say, damn it, how did I step into that same trap again?
Yes, yeah. Well, fortunately, I just remember the first 5 years of business. It was just so extremely stressful. I mean, the first 8 years was just so extremely stressful. But it wasn't necessarily negative stress, and it wasn't stress that I couldn't handle. I could handle the stress, but it was extremely intense, you know, and it was intense because I didn't know whether what I was doing was the right thing to do. Yeah. I didn't have any...
good point, yeah.
You know, so it was more the unknown that I was stressed about, you know, and the fact that I had absolutely no backup. There's no one that I'm going to go and ask for money for if things doesn't go according to plan. There's nothing I could fall back on, really, you know. And so I went through a time in the business where I felt so alone in the business because, you know, I'm being told what I want to hear and not what's really going on in the business. And because I'm not involved in all those divisions of the business anymore.
It's frustrating.
Yes. Mm. And so those were the stressful things. And I have no idea whether we're actually making money or not making money. You know, because it wasn't clear to me. I didn't know what was being hidden and what's the reality. Mm-hmm. So those were the really challenging times. And then I would employ people from outside, people who hasn't really been involved in this industry before, based on their background maybe and other big corporate businesses, try and get them involved in the business, and then it didn't work. It just doesn't work. And then everything goes backwards. The company morale goes backwards. And at the same time, you need to make sure that the forefront of the business, the brand, and the
healthy
perception, it's got to look very healthy. Mm. But the back end of the business was in turmoil at the time.
And it's good for people to know that we do tend to think that a business gets to a size where there's no danger of it falling.
Yeah.
But your business is quite big, strong brand. But when you got back close to it again,
yeah,
you realized, gosh, we're actually in a bit of trouble here.
Yeah. And you actually, it's funny that you actually realize the depth of the trouble 5 months down the line when you look back, or a year down the line, or 2 years down the line. Yeah. Then only you understand how deep you were into the trouble. But while you're facing the trouble and the difficulty, because you're not accepting it, because you're not accepting the fact that, listen, you know, we're not going to make it, you're almost in a way... you know, it's because it's not a failure, it's not a possibility even. You know, you don't see the trouble for maybe what it is, I suppose. So I think maybe if you talk about the difficult time while it's going difficult and you only discuss problems for what the problems are, not solutions, you almost accept the fact that that things are tough. And what I always say to my team is, don't ever accept, don't ever even mention out there that things are challenging, that we're struggling, or that times are tough, you know, because you got to believe that things are going well. If the moment that that retail or the consumer even suspects that USN is taking strain, then they lose faith in the business. They lose faith in the products, and it just goes all the way back again. So you know, so the positive attitude in a tough time was I think that pulled us through the tough times quite a lot, and just not accepting that it's that we're going through a challenging time.
Tell us where the business is now. So now we are 2016 August.
Yeah. So the business is very structured, very organized. We the profitability of the business is very clear. We can tell you on a daily basis where we're tracking for the month, whether it's South Africa, the UK, where the GPs are, where the, you know, which categories of products delivers which GP on a weekly basis, which retail chain delivers which GP, what exact GP we need to make in a certain time to achieve a certain net profit. So from that point of view, and I mean, that's got nothing to do with anything that I did, because it's not my forte, but we've got very dynamic people in the business. And
I can remind us again, what countries? So you have offices now. How many countries did you say?
So we've got offices in South Africa, France, the UK, Czech Republic, Australia, and America.
All right. But your product goes to many more countries.
Yes, then it gets distributed from those countries to a lot more countries. And I mean, there are distributors even in America that's supplying, you know, one big distributor is supplying 80 different countries. Then our fastest growing account, which is Amazon in the UK, obviously they would be supplying to a lot of countries that we don't even know about. So USN is definitely getting distributed to 80 different countries that we know of, and where we've got some involvement. But then there's obviously some distribution happening that we're not aware of to all the other countries.
What's the romantic part of this business and the not so romantic? I mean, the romantic has to be you meet athletes, I don't know, you deal with fit people. So there has to be a nice romantic part of the business, but then there's the haha part that people don't necessarily see.
I would say, I mean, everything about the business is really exciting, you know. I don't really get involved in, let's say, if finances, I mean, when finances are good, it's also romantic, you know. So if the events that we do is exciting, you know, I would say the business in general, it's an exciting industry. It's an exciting business. Maybe I'm not appreciating the fact that we traveling all over the world all the time, I should probably appreciate that more. It probably looks a lot more romantic than what it is. To me, it's just business. Whether I'm in an office in Australia, or whether I'm in an office in France or in America, I'm just in an office doing the work we enjoy doing. And sometimes you're not even really aware of where you are in the world, you know. So the traveling seems probably a lot more romantic than what it is. Sometimes you got to take a step back to really appreciate that.
Where did you open up in the US?
In Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Okay.
Yeah. So manufacturing obviously happening in America. We've got a couple of contract manufacturers all over America. And then from there, we distribute to South America as well, and China and Mexico. Well, obviously, which is South America, but India and Russia and so on.
Just for interest's sake, which iconic athletes are you close to? Athletes, sportsmen, sportswomen, whatever. I mean,
yeah, and we often forget about the icons they are because they become such good friends, you know. I mean, I don't want to mention one and not mention the 10 other, you know.
Maybe but one you admire a great deal. I mean, is it some of the captains, some of the sports skippers?
I mean,
people often ask me, who are the favorite leaders you've interviewed?
Yeah.
And I've gone from all the way from presidents to CEOs, and I actually forget, and I go, gosh, I don't know, man. I don't know who it is.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand that, but yet, if you had to stop for a moment.
Yes.
And just say, okay, well, that is a very interesting part. You deal with people who are at the peak, people who are icons, people who are admired and revered by the rest of the world. But they're human, all of us.
I would say the guy that comes to mind right away is Cameron van der Berg. You know, just his absolute energy, and you know, you think that guy must be on medication to have that amount of energy, you know. And but you know, he's such a positive guy. It doesn't matter, you know, about any adversity or any setbacks or anything. And I mean, that to me is the type of athlete that'll become a fantastic businessman one day. Okay. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. As we start wrapping up, Louis, you want to make any final comments before we ask Albi to maybe share a final leadership thought also with leaders out there?
Albi, can I just make a quick summary, try and understand your essence as a leader? First of all, you have a love, a passion for sales. You start off with that one. It's very important for people to understand it. And setting objectives and goals. Without that passion, one can't get too far. You love the creative part of the developing new ideas, innovation. It's natural to you. You love growth and movement. To see that, we of course believe leadership is about positive movement. You show tangible steel. In other words, there's a time to draw a line. This character is vital to good leadership. You've got to know where to draw the line, and the more you know that, the more flexible one can be. But you've got to know where, and you show a history of that. You love being agile. In other words, to move quickly or else don't move at all. You believe failure is not an option. And sometimes it could be a problem because one can ignore the problems, but you believe not an option. You learned about a line of sight importance. The bigger the business, the more difficult it is. We had one of our big guests said that he spoke to the head of Coca-Cola, and the one typically with him, make sure you've got line of sight, know what's going on. Mm. And it could be walk around, it could be many ways, but it's important. I think it worries you if you don't have line of sight. Yes. And now, of course, you've got good systems in place. Then you don't accept negatives. We say in standalone mode, you appreciate it's got to be there, but you don't accept they stand by themselves to dominate your thinking. So therefore, if there's no solution to it, you don't want to admit them. So yeah. They must not be in standalone mode. And we really appreciate spending time with you, really.
So just your final message to leaders, and then we wrap up. Just a message. Suppose all the leaders in the world are listening right now and they want to hear from you.
Well, I would say set the example. Set the example with regards to applying energy, being dynamic, coming up with solutions, and being a problem solver. If you're a good problem solver, and that's always... I would say that is always at the core of a business. Then you're giving the people around you the opportunity to come up with solutions to solve problems, because solving problems is creating opportunities. Problems are opportunities, I always say. And it's those companies that cannot solve the problems who doesn't grow as fast as as the companies who face the problems and conquer them and come up with solutions. So I would say set that example and be very open to being taught. You know, whether it's the new rep who's learned a couple of new things or picked up on what's going on in the trade, or some small pharmacy in a small town, there's always something to learn, and there's always a lot to learn from anyone in the business.
Mm. That's the voice of Albi Geldenhuys, the CEO and founder of USN Sports Supplements. Albi, it's been great having you with us. I'm glad we caught up, and I'm glad I could interview you here in your office. But just to end off then, and I'm going to indulge and say we end off with a Sibanye executive inspirational thought. And I'm going to make it short and sweet and quote it from you and say, failure is not an option. If you're a leader, a good leader, worth your salt, failure is not an option. And I'll make that our Sibanye executive leadership thought. We look forward to being with you again next week. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
This is CliffCentral.com.